this is your Polycast for Tuesday, March 27th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, progress on a pension fix and worries about the risks associated with the new Northern Minnesota pipeline. Minnesota lawmakers are on the cusp of making substantial repairs to public worker pensions. The state Senate voted unanimously for the change yesterday, and there appears to be support in the House, too. Brian Baxt explains how the stars are aligning for the pricey pension fix.
First, a bit of history. State leaders and legislators have known for some time that they have a big problem on their hands. The amount going into pension accounts for police officers, teachers, state clerical workers, and many others eventually won't be enough to pay benefits out. The various accounts cover more than 500,000 current or future recipients. Those beneficiaries are living longer. The assumed rate of investment return is higher than many other states predict, and cost of living adjustments have been more generous than the funds can afford. That and some other factors left Minnesota staring down at a future pension gap of almost $17 billion. That's billion with a B.
We've gotten by on the cheap. But this can't go on. We are now perilously close to states who have avoided addressing their pension problems.
DFL Senator Sandy Pappas of St. Paul laid out the stakes moments before the 66-0 vote. For added emphasis, she threw in the names of some famously troubled states when it comes to pensions.
We can no longer keep our heads in the sand. If we don't act now, we can slip into the problems that states like New Jersey and Illinois face.
Wall Street bond houses are starting to come down in governments where pensions are out of whack. Minnesota was recently put on notice that its credit rating could suffer, which would make it more expensive to borrow for construction projects. That brings us to the plan on the table. Republican Senator Julie Rosen of Vernon Center called the bill she sponsored historic.
The resulting sustainability package that includes these significant benefit reforms and adjustments are the largest in Minnesota pension history. They focus on the element of choice and not the retiree's core benefits.
The moves would chop that unfunded liability about in half. The package relies on both employers and employees kicking in more, and retirees expecting slightly less in return. Early retirement or pension cash-outs would be less attractive. Governor Mark Dayton vetoed past bills that would have begun addressing the state's pension problems. He says the difference this time is that there is far more consensus among the various stakeholders, and so far no poison pill language.
It requires sacrifice from recipients, people working now, people who are already retired, as well as a higher state share. So it's something that's pulled everybody together, which is a tremendous feat by itself.
John Westmoreland is executive director of state government's largest employee union, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Council 5. He says lawmakers would be wise to listen to the pension experts who fine-tuned the deal.
This is probably the first time when all of the partners have come together and said, this is the right thing to do, it's the right format, it's the right formula. That speaks volumes to me because everybody's agreeing this is the proper fix.
While the proposal cruised through the Senate, it has a ways to go in the House. Republican Representative Steve Drazkowski of Mazeppa says he'll be studying the package hard to make sure it's the best deal for taxpayers.
We don't want it to be simply a bailout, and I certainly won't be voting for a bill if it's only a bailout. We need to have something where everybody contributes to it.
He appreciates that employees and pension recipients would contribute to the fix, but so would the state treasury, to the tune of $27 million this year and much more in years to come. House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Jim Knobloch says it's far from ideal to redirect a portion of a budget surplus to this area and commit the state to additional payments later. But the St. Cloud Republican says,
I tell people it's kind of like the old oil change commercial where the guy says, you can pay me now or you can pay me later. And that's what this is like. I mean, if we don't put some money into this now, these are state obligations and we're going to have to pay them later and pay a lot more later.
While the proposal doesn't entirely close the pension gap, lawmakers hope it will buy them more time to get there. Covering politics, I'm Brian Baxt at the Capitol.
The legislature also voted yesterday to give state employees a raise. It approved contracts negotiated by the Dayton administration that will increase pay for more than 30,000 workers by 2% this year and 2.5% next year. The state employees had to wait since last fall to see whether they would get raises. Back in October, a legislative committee rejected the union contracts, and the votes yesterday overturned that decision. Hundreds of people rallied at the Capitol Monday to call on President Donald Trump to renew a program that allows thousands of Liberians to remain in the U.S. Many at the rally fear the Trump administration's hard line on immigration may break up families and send many back to a home they left long ago. Tim Nelson has the story.
Christina Wilson is living on borrowed time. She's a Liberia native who fled her country's civil war in September of 2000. She sent her mother and kids to Ghana to escape the violence.
So everybody was looking for somewhere peaceful to live. And when the Americans opened their arms to us, we decided to come this way.
And for nearly two decades, the U.S. let her stay, recently as part of the DED program, or the Deferred and Forced Departure. With a start dating back to 1991, it gets renewed regularly, but temporarily, most recently in September of 2016 by President Barack Obama. But that official determination only runs through the end of this month. If it expires, native Liberians like Wilson may face deportation and an uncertain future.
Liberia is a place that I left a long time. I don't know if I have a place there right now. Homes were, destroyed. I have nothing to go to right now, so be frank.
She's now living in Crystal and working as a nursing assistant. She's earned a culinary arts degree in Minnesota and dreams of opening her own restaurant. But for now, Wilson is still supporting her children back in Liberia and worried what will happen if she gets deported and loses her job. And that was a common theme at the state capitol, where hundreds of Liberians gathered to sing, cheer, and call for President Donald Trump to renew DED, like Obama and President George Bush did before him. Of the more than 4,000 people eligible to stay, experts think most Liberians facing potential deportation have homes and families in Minnesota, as well as many jobs in the state's healthcare industry. But the Trump administration has already announced its intention to end two other high-profile immigration programs, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals and the Temporary Protected Status for Salvadorans and Haitians. Trump himself was reported to have made disparaging remarks about African immigration in January, although a spokesman later denied Trump had used a profanity to describe African countries. That, along with critical remarks about immigration, support for a wall along the Mexican border, and Trump's praise for the peaceful transfer of power in Liberian elections last year, have some suspecting DED may soon end. Abdullah Kiatumba is head of Brooklyn Park-based African Immigrant Services. He noted that Trump has already extended protections for another group of African immigrants from South Sudan.
Amidst this anti-immigrant climate and all of that, we've seen some light at the end of the tunnel. We've seen some light shine through these challenges. And some of it's happened recently.
A spokesperson for U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services referred questions about the program to the White House, where officials did not respond to an inquiry about the program's future today. Kiatumba says he hopes the president will renew the program at least one more time and offer Liberians another opportunity to come up with a permanent solution to the immigration limbo some have lived in for decades. Covering politics, I'm Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Minnesota is getting ready to make a big decision on a controversial proposed oil pipeline. Enbridge Energy wants to replace its Line 3 pipeline in northern Minnesota with a new, larger pipe along a different route. Part of the rationale is safety. Line 3 has had some big spills in the past. It's cracking and corroding. But critics argue putting another pipeline through the lakes and rivers of northern Minnesota, even a modern new line, is a risk too big to take. Dan Crocker reports.
Earlier this winter, I bounced down a snow-packed road through the woods of northern Minnesota toward Big LaSalle Lake, about 4 miles north of Lake Itasca, where the Mississippi River begins.
The LaSalle Valley.
My guide is Richard Smith, director of a group called Friends of the Headwaters.
Should we pop out?
Yeah.
A photographer by trade, Smith started the volunteer group 5 years ago when he first learned of Enbridge Energy's plans to build new pipelines through the region.
And I think all our water is important.
particularly in this state. You know, that's why we believe a barrel of water is worth more than a barrel of oil up here.
We trudge through deep snow toward LaSalle Creek. The creek drains into a chain of lakes, including LaSalle Lake, the second deepest in the state. Enbridge wants to build its new Line 3 along a new route across northern Minnesota. It would cross several sensitive areas, including this one. Paul Stolen, a retired scientist with the Minnesota DNR who now volunteers for Friends of the Headwaters, says if there's a pipeline rupture here,
you're not going to be able to clean up the oil. If it reaches the bottom of the valley, it's simply not going to do that because of the nature of the wetland soils and the uniqueness of this area.
Stolen acknowledges the risk of a spill in this particular spot is low.
But you have to look at the long term and you have to ask the question, is there a better place? And yes, there's better places.
But later, I get a different perspective from above.
That's an off the ground here in Bemidji.
Enbridge took me 300 feet up in a helicopter to show me the proposed new pipeline corridor.
There's forests and lakes and here's the pipeline corridor. Not much else.
Line 3 director Barry Simonson says pipelines can coexist with Minnesota's natural environment.
Along the preferred route we have for Line 3, there's water resources everywhere. I think we're well aware of that, and we've heard that loud and clear. I think it's a testament to the credibility that Enbridge has that the existing waters that exist today, where pipelines have existed since 1949 and then built out consecutively over time, those waters are still, quote-unquote, pristine.
Still, Enbridge has had major incidents. Back in 1991, Line 3 ruptured near Grand Rapids and spilled 1.7 million gallons of oil. It's still the largest inland oil spill ever in the U.S. Another accident in Cohasset in 2002 spilled more than 250,000 gallons. Recently, though, Enbridge's safety record has improved. Over the past 5 years, there have only been two spills on Enbridge pipelines in Minnesota of 210 gallons or more.
And they're kind of bucking the trend.
Carl Weimer is executive director of the watchdog group Pipeline Safety Trust. He says nationally, crude oil pipeline spills are trending slightly upwards, but Enbridge's incident numbers are heading in the opposite direction.
Enbridge is certainly not the worst pipeline company in the country. They're not the best either, but they seem to be better than the majority of the large companies just looking at incident data.
But Enbridge is still dealing with the memory of this.
Off the top at 5 o'clock, developing news. Crews frantically working to contain an oil spill south of Marshall in Calhoun County.
In 2010, an Enbridge pipeline in Michigan ruptured and spilled more than 1 million gallons of heavy Canadian crude into the Kalamazoo River. The spill took years and over $1 billion to clean up.
That was one incident that the company, you know, takes full responsibility for. All releases that happen, we take responsibility for. But
again, Enbridge's Barry Simonson.
That really was a game changer in the industry in terms of stepping up our game and the industry's game. So yes, there have been incidents that have happened in the past, and we're not proud of those, but we strive to ensure we don't have any releases like that going forward.
One of the ways it does that is with a device called a pipeline inspection gauge.
So yeah, this is the geometry inspection tool.
Affectionately called a pig.
That's right, yep.
Enbridge's pipeline integrity program manager Jeremy Ward showed me a smart pig at the company's terminal in Superior, Wisconsin. Pigs are sent through the pipe in a batch of oil. They detect various defects like cracks or corrosion. All that data is then collected and analyzed. And then Ward says any problem sections they identify are dug up and repaired.
It's a multi-layered defense to keep the oil in the pipe.
But in the last 16 years, Enbridge has had to conduct 950 so-called integrity digs on Line 3 as the pipe has degraded, and it's forecasting thousands more over the next several years. So Enbridge argues building a new Line 3 with thicker steel and modern technology actually reduces environmental risk. But critics argue that a modern pipeline will eventually become old, and even a new pipeline isn't guaranteed not to leak.
We have to be really careful. Just because a pipeline is new doesn't mean that it's invincible.
This is energy industry consultant Richard Kuprowitz. He's submitted testimony on Line 3 on behalf of Friends of the Headwaters.
No one in their right mind wants to build a multi-billion dollar pipeline that turns out to be junk, all right? But it can happen.
Federal data shows that nationwide, pipelines installed since 2010 have actually had more than twice the number of incidents as older pipelines. The Keystone Pipeline, for example, has had three major leaks since it was built 8 years ago, including a major spill late last year in South Dakota. John Studi with the Association of Oil Pipelines in Washington says for the most part, those spills tend to be small and contained on site as new pipeline systems work out kinks.
But when you look at how many of those incidents impacted the public or the environment, we actually show a 20% decrease over the last 5 years.
And Enbridge, again, appears to be bucking this national trend. Barry Simonson says none of its major new pipes built in the last decade have experienced failures. Still, critics of the plan inevitably come back to one central argument.
With pipelines, inevitably, they do leak.
Jim Rentz of Cass County is with the citizens group Northern Water Alliance.
We're taking the risk for a private company's profit, and I don't think that's right.
And even if the risk of a catastrophic spill in a sensitive spot is tiny, it's just not worth it, he and others argue. Not in northern Minnesota, especially when you add concerns about climate change and tribal rights. State regulators are going to have to factor all of that when they decide in June whether Minnesota needs a new oil pipeline. Covering the environment, I'm Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Tuesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.